kitchen, cooking breakfast for the Queen. The Queen was in the parlor, playing piano for the children of the King.
You know, one of the nuggets I missed referencing in the first part was that whole Fellini thing tripped me out about Juliet of the Spirits. And that the previous film, getting a lot of echo there, David.
Quite echo in it.
Yeah, I think that might be from, are you muting when I'm talking?
I can.
Is that Juliet of the Spirit was, the film before it was 8.5. So that makes that film number 9 for Fellini. So I thought that was a sweet little
Number nine.
Kind of like echoing. Like this movie is taking place all the time, all around you, in every corner of America right now. You know, that... Okay. These little white babies are being made, and these mothers are kind of tuning in to this world that they're bringing their babies into.
Okay.
Kind of interesting.
I got something for you. So I'm looking up Humpty Dumpty from Alice in Wonderland, right? So Humpty Dumpty is listed as the Red Queen's Rook. Okay? The Rook is the castle, and it comes from Sanskrit, meaning chariot. Which is interesting if you think of like a Merkaba, literally translates as chariot from Hebrew. But what's crazy is it's the castle, it's also the tower, right? It says, I am the Eggman, I am the walrus, cuckoo-ca-choo, right? The fucking like tower collapses, the tower in tarot, right? You have Humpty Dumpty falls off the wall. In Alice in Wonderland, he falls, she meets him, does a whole thing, and then he falls off the wall and breaks into all these pieces, which is supposed to be madness. But then you have like, you know, the ninth gate, number nine, the fucking, like, the tower itself collapses, which is, can't help but remind me of, like, the whole idea of, like, Helter Skelter and the fact that you're erecting something and then it falls. It's the whole, it's Babel, right?
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, the Tower of Babel falling is actually a descent into madness. It's when you reach a certain point in your ascent and then the whole thing just falls. Which in this case, you could be looking at the whole 60s movement as such a thing, or at least projecting that appearance.
Well, and that...
Also, just to say, all for John, number 9 is his birthday, October 9th, and the day that he meets Yoko, November 9th. And I don't know, that wasn't there a whole thing that they did something weird with Sean's pregnancy so that he would be born on John's birthday, October 9th, that Sean is born on October 9th. So, like, John had a whole thing, like, he was born to the number 9. Huh. You know, it's not like they're doing, like, and just the same way that, like, you know.
Wait a minute, do they have the same birthday?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
John and Sean have the same birthday.
There you go. That's fucking crazy. I don't know if I realized that.
Must use a lot of heavy use of the forceps, I'm thinking, on that birth. You know, like coming down to the wire. John, he's got to hit that bullseye. You know, get him out. I don't care. He's going to be born on the 9.
Yeah, October 9th. Yeah.
Bill, how did you get to Aleph again earlier with the ox? What were you saying?
Well, today, you know, connecting through Pete Townsend, is that today is John Entwistle's birthday. The bass player for The Who, and his nickname is The Ox.
Oh, they call him The Ox.
Yeah.
There you go.
Actually, Johnny Thunderfingers.
Okay, I love that, because first of all, Aleph is the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and you look at it as, so with Bereshit is
the house.
The beginning. It's Aleph, in a sense, because you're saying it's the new beginning. I mean, and also the letters are actually meant to represent musical notes, whereas like Tav is a half step in between scales, which is the end, which is the universe, which is Saturn, which is what we talked about last Thursday on the show. But here you have like, you know, the idea of a new beginning. It's really appropriate. You're ending the Torah, and you basically take the scroll, you roll it up, and then you start over at the beginning. So that's something.
So the ox is saying to John Lennon, you say it's your birthday? It's my birthday, too. And Sean's birthday, too.
Right, and so you have the bull, which is basically an ox at the end of The Last Unicorn with Mia Farrow. Once again, I was just...
What's this fucking movie, man? The Last Unicorn?
And America does the whole soundtrack. Hilarious, dude. I love it. My girlfriend's obsessed with unicorns. So it's like one of her favorite... The fact that I was using it for synchronistic purposes, I think she was getting a kick out of it. I was like, whoa, Rosemary's Dew of the Sea and the fucking unicorns, the Dew of the Sea. And yeah. So that's crazy.
So we're at Your Blues.
Yeah, we're at Your Blues, and she is getting the news that she's a mom. Oh no, that ends. She wakes up with the scratches all over her body to the Your Blues.
Feels so suicidal. Birthday.
Yeah. Just like Dylan's Mrs. Jones.
Hmm.
And then she is it. Wait, it, does that not say? Does that change? Is that not the same sink that you have?
When she wakes up from impregnation.
When she wakes up, not during the impregnation. But when she wakes up the next day and she's just in bed and he's acting.
Your birthday is actually comes on the moment that the scene comes in, like right on point from my timing. That was my experience. I'm trying to remember when Your Blues comes in. I don't know. I'm spacing.
How do we get off sync? We're using the same. Oh. I'm using the mono mix.
Mono mix is longer, I think.
Is the mono mix longer? I'm pretty sure.
Well, I think it might have to do with fade outs or something.
If it was long, then Your Blues would come before birthday.
No, your blues still comes after birthday. Oh, we're going to be off sync here.
I mean, in terms of if it was longer. I don't mean before the actual song. I phrased that wrong. I mean that it would be earlier in the film than that. Because Your Birthday is actually the moment she wakes up. I'm pretty damn certain of that.
Oh.
She might. I don't know.
I thought she was actually in the middle of it all during birthday.
Yeah. That's what it actually, the scene, it ends when the Pope kisses her finger. It says, kiss my ring. And then it goes to black, and it goes to Your Blue. That's where Your Blues kicks in, for me. But that's weird. That's an I gotta do a little research here on White Album running length, running time. Mono version.
We kind of glossed over Julia. Beautiful, beautiful song. And David had made the point that Julia in a cult kind of reference means, what was it again, David?
It's Jove's child. It literally is child of Jupiter.
Yeah, that's just fucking crazy. So Julia is child of Jupiter. Yoko is child of the sea.
Right. And so that's the whole thing of like that basically Rosemary is the dew of the sea. Mary is sea. Right. So that's just.
Yeah. Okay. I'm with it now. I was struggling with it, but yeah, no, that's, I like how the one of my favorite lines in that song is half of what I say is meaningless. The way he puts the emphasis on less. So not meaningless, but meaningless. And I guess that is inspired by a quote by Khalil Gibran. And there's a quote by Gibran that says, "Half of what I say is meaningless, but I say it so that the other half may reach you." Which, I mean, when you're talking about sync films, that's kind of the whole glory of The Stew, is that, for me at least, just oceans of information and reference and inference jump out of the screen that I had just completely missed before whenever I put an appropriate album alongside it or parallel with it. So I really, really like how that is just... That's like... Okay, earlier Andras had talked about a sync film having these moments of connectivity that last for minutes at a time. And I had always associated that with Stanley Kubrick's idea that a film essentially has 6 or 7 unsubmersible units. You ever hear that quote?
I don't think so, actually.
So he's saying that a film is constructed of these unsubmersible units. And the way I visualize that is sort of like Sphero on the Tree of Life, that you have these 6 spheres, and the way you arrange them, you're on the other side of the canvas or of the screen, and you arrange these spheres. But then when the light and everything's put together, the person on the other side of the screen sees a linear narrative. But if they spend time with it, they can find themselves on the other side of the screen and basically boil it down to these 6 unsubmersible units.
Right. Actually, the spheres are continually in older text referred to as stones for that reason, in a sense. I mean, basically, you're looking at nodal points that are universally applied in terms of dynamics, so that no matter what the appearance, there's these basically these parallels that you'll discover if you dig deep enough that are consistent. And so that you can map out consciousness through these nodal points. And that's the basic premise. They're basically like anchors, or at least like reference points in order to find one's way, no matter what the variation happens to be.
Perfect. So the same stones used to construct Rosemary's Baby are what the Beatles are using to construct the White Album.
Right, I think that there's like a set of basically universal points in which to work with, and I feel like that's something that you'll see like with Pink Floyd's Animals and Charlotte's Web, and that's something that you'll see with A Momentary Lapse of Reason and The Land Before Time, and that's something that you'll see with like Marilyn Manson's Antichrist Superstar and Jesus Christ Superstar.
The Lifehouse Matrix has been, that's the other one that has been, well, we haven't really touched on, but the Pete Town, that's another one where they just, I think also all of these, they sync at the beginning, you can tell at the beginning.
Right.
Like they immediately say, this was meant to be this way. Like your heart jumps in the first seconds.
I appreciated that you put that up on YouTube. I really enjoyed that. I didn't watch it all the way through, but I watched a number of them, of the sections. And
it's amazing. I mean, I don't want it to have it be about, that, but like that, for me, that was the, like, actually when the thing we did with Alan, where I was talking about how, I thought it would work with anything because I was having such fun time with Lifehouse Matrix, and you know, you're making the argument that it's, you know, there are some that are special, and I came around to that really quick, you know, that there are some like this, the Rosemary's Baby White Album or Rosemary's White Baby Album or whatever. Uh-huh. That is just, it's so perfect. Like, it's not just like putting any song to any film, they'll uh-huh. always work, but there are some that seem like they were in the way like dreams are, like they're so perfect. It's like did I plant that there to remind myself?
Right. Totally. You know? There's like, I have a feeling that's almost kind of eerie when I find the timing of something like Antichrist Superstar and Jesus Christ Superstar. I watched fucking 30 times from different points until I found the point that worked best, which is right when the bus door opens. At the moment of that, it's like perfect. But there's a feeling that I get that I feel like I'm not the first to be here. Like I feel the sense when it lines up to that degree that someone else is doing this somewhere.
Well,
someone else has.
David, I have the feeling of being like a conductor with like all these players in front of me. And then when I get everyone in tune playing the song they're supposed to be playing, there's this moment that like I feel like everybody, like as crazy as it is, like there were thousands of people behind me and they all stood up because they all recognized, oh, the conductor's got them playing the way we know right. They can play. And there's a presence in the room when you, like you said, working on one, hammering away at it and building it. And then when everything slides into place, I mean, it's pretty unreal.
There's a phenomenon with psychedelics where there is a very intense desire for perfection. I've seen it with people where like if you're in a room with a situation where you have a DJ and the DJ loses the beat at all, the intense energetic around it, it's like there is an energetic demand that it line up. And you can see it both like from sometimes people who are playing who are having that kind of experience, or from people in the room. Like if there wasn't the psychedelic involvement, the pressure isn't as great. And so there's definitely a phenomenon there. One big thing that I can only touch on here because of the amount of information surrounding it is the relationship between the atomic bomb and LSD and how that relates to the Babylon working. And Crowley Moonchild idea with Jack Parsons as head of JPL and involvement with that, along with Robert Oppenheimer, and how like crazy this sounds, but the amount of parallels there are so direct, it's unbelievable. And so what I propose as a possibility is that the Moonchild itself was never meant to be something incarnate in the way that we would normally think of like a golem or something like that, but more like as a like a living intelligence that uses material as a medium. And so when they were looking to create their Thelemic Messiah who would spread the new law of the Aeon, you know, it's possible that there was an agent that would help facilitate that is actually the Messiah, is actually an intelligence rather than an embodied creature. And that it I mean, like, that's how I relate to this whole thing.
I agree completely.
I look at Rosemary's Baby as just that, and that it starts out with a certain purity and then it does what it does, and it basically becomes something else that, you know, we didn't necessarily like hope or expect that it would, you know, but the potential is there, you know. So I don't know. I can only touch on it so much here, but that's like my main approach to this.
I agree with you completely, because I don't see a Moonchild and never have felt that. No, that's bullshit. Early on, I could have forced myself to try to make sense of people actually trying to give birth to some sort of baby that was immune to the forces of the zodiac. You know, it was pure nurture, not nature, you know, but obviously still nature. Right. That was, so, you know.
You obviously haven't visited Park Slope anytime. I mean, there are people trying to make moon children all the time now. Like, the focus on like making birth special and like free from like the influences of hospitals is huge.
Well, isn't like indigo babies and indigo children, all that just whacked out, like just evil parenting bullshit that that is, you've transformed, you know, your Catholic child into the Indigo child. That it
even wants a child to be super special.
Yeah, that's like just projecting failure and just desire onto this new life that you don't have anymore. It's just awful, man. And that's just as satanic as anything happening in the Bromford in this film, to a certain extent.
Well, in its own way, I suppose.
Well, because unless you really believe that, you know, you said it very beautifully earlier about how if you really look into Roman Catholicism and you take it to its absurd tower-toppling peak, you basically have what the Satanists are in this movie.
Right.
That, like, you should feel lucky. He chose you out of everybody, and you brought his son into this world. I mean, what the fuck did Mary think when she woke up pregnant, you know, if we were going to go to that absurd level?
Right. Well, that's the thing with the gospel is that it's written in four parts and that there's actually four Marys. People would say that there's Mary the mother and then Mary Magdalene and whatnot. But if you follow it, the fact that if you take the four books and you align them, in terms of time sequence, you have basically like a play, the joke of these four Marys showing up to see Jesus at different times of the day. It's not a mistake that it tells you exactly the time of the day that Mary shows up. And Mary itself from the Aramaic means rebellious woman. Whereas like if you take it from the Latin, and like I said, it means sea. But it's interesting just to consider, like, I don't know. I look at the gospel as kind of like a very sadistic joke on the Bible or the Old Testament in a way that's like continuing on with the same format but then doing its own thing and basically putting people into a position where they're having the tree itself spread out apart from itself and then nailed into place, you know, we're like crucified in space or something. It's like a really strange technique there, but I that's like another thing to touch on that I feel could be backed up more, but I, you know, there's only so much tangents you can go into here.
So, you know, just to backtrack real quick before we get into the songs, I just wanted to put into focus why I kind of spotlighted that number saying that you had watched this 25 times in 2 weeks, Andras, because I think that if anyone had said in casual conversation, oh man, you know, I picked up this new album by the Beatles and I must have listened to it like, you know, twice a day for the last 2 weeks. I must have listened to it like 30 times in the last 2 weeks. People would say, yeah, man, were you know, you smoking some weed or, you know, like, yeah, in the car or in your headphones. Like, no one would even blink an eye if you had listened to a double album that many times in that short amount of space, right? It would just be not a big deal. But if you had just watched Rosemary's Baby as it is 25 times in 2 weeks, I mean, do you think you could possibly do that? And so I don't think it really is that possible. And I really think of Kubrick basically, I forget the exact quote, but it's basically saying that directing a movie is sort of falls short of like making music, that if you're doing it correctly, it approaches the creation of music. And so that music is always in his mind when he goes about directing and constructing the visual aspects of a film. That's why I think his films lend themselves so well to this overlaying of literal new soundtracks. So just to go into this whole understanding media, which is what the 20th century is all about, is understanding media, the extensions and the explicit manifestations of what we are as human beings, and understanding how just a slight, subtle difference makes all the difference.
Whoa,
there's some media.
What do you guys think of like Revolution Number One meets Revolution Number Nine in terms of Revolver?
How do you mean?
I mean, in the sense where, first of all, like, they came out with Revolver, you know, beforehand with Yellow Submarine, and then you have the name of the place at the Charles Manson, the Manson family house, they refer to as Yellow Submarine. But then the whole idea of, like, that a revolution is a revolving thing, and so you don't, so you have, like, a spiraling progress, like, similar, like Helter Skelter, you're climbing upstairs to go down a slide and keep going around in circles. But like the relationship between revolution number one, which is also saying, you know, if you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out in, that basically like he's acknowledging like the, could be acknowledging the nature of the thing in the first place, like how the thing always turns into the very thing that it went to overcome. Like, you know, the Rebel Alliance defeats the Empire and then builds a republic and then becomes an empire. And then out of that comes a Rebel Alliance that defeats the Empire and then becomes a republic and so on and so forth. But then you have, like, Revolution number 9 is, like, a total psychedelic, like, insanity thing, kind of showing, like, the direction of the revolution just goes into madness in the same way that, like, you build the Tower of Babel to reach this point and then it collapses and you go into lunacy. I don't know.
The most important thing about Revolution number 9 is that it's the exact opposite of what we're doing here, is that Lennon said he wanted to paint a picture of revolution with sound. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to put a movie into an audio track, whereas we're putting, well, you know what I'm trying to say, my algebra is fucked up there, is that it's just the inverse process, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I can't put a film and an extended video presentation or a painting, because film is just, you know, moving painting. I can't put that in my audio record, but I can approach it the best I can. Yeah. Because I want to encompass all media and show how all media is interrelated and interconnected. So, you know, you have to have Revolution number 9 on that record. It's essential. Right.
I feel like Cry Baby Cry, like basically, you know, you're old enough to know better, whatever, that it's basically like you have the child of the new eon of Horus, which is just, you know, Dionysian, you know, what, like madness, basically. It's like there is this like, I don't know, it's like talking to the new whatever it is as a child. And then it's like, I don't know, like I have this weird, like I look at the baby in at the end of 2001 and I look at Rosemary's Baby and I see this like parallel expression of like us as the emerging child of Horus of the new eon, if that makes any fucking sense. It's kind of a strange thought, but.
No, I it's not strange.
Oh, not at all.
Not at all. It's perfectly rational, brother. I do think just from a technical reference is that for my sync, when Cry Baby Cry starts, the scene ends and they cut to her sitting in a chair crying. Mm-hmm. I mean, just gorgeous, you know, just one of those perfect little elements of being that far into the album and it's still hitting on all cylinders. It's just really beautiful.
Was someone looking for the timing of the difference between the mono?
Andras was.
Yeah, I was, and I wasn't able to, like, there's a lot of dissections of what's that are like, you know, the difference between each song, like it doesn't give times.
Huh. So I compared it to the LP. I downloaded a you know, a version which is digital, and sometimes I like to make sure with digital versions that they're the same as the LP. But as far as I could tell, everything is the same. So I don't really know. I do feel like there's a value in doing this with records, like Dark Side of the Rainbow. Unless if I don't have my turntable available, I normally exclusively do it with the turntable, because if you get the timing slightly off, if you have pitch control and like a Technics, you can kind of just make a quick adjustment if you know how to do that. And I find it's kind of a more, even more interactive, because you have to find the point at which it ends. And sometimes there's interesting nuances that occur, or clues, actually. It seems like totally, it's fucked up, but it seems like intentional. Like,
come on, old man. Come on, old man. What are you talking about? There's too much work.
What's that?
It's too much work, man.
No, it's not.
Is it?
I don't know. It takes me fucking, you know, whatever.
Well, you're a DJ, so you can just flip those platters and get the needle in the groove and you're off and running. I don't know if I have the acuity with that stuff.
A lot of the stuff I did with VHS to begin with, because I didn't have the DVD available. So I'd like rewind Jesus Christ Superstar fucking over and over and over again to find the right fucking time.
Well, here,
and I don't.
How insane is this though, Dave? How insane is that in Honey Pie, crackles from a 78 RPM record were added into the audio of a vinyl record?
That's funny.
Because what else would you listen to?
Yeah, in Blackbird, it sounds like a crackling record too. In the you can the popping, you know.
But the popping is already there. Why do you have to add it?
Right.
Right.
It's funny.
It kind of is.
You know that? Have you ever guys? You know Rick Griffin, who did all the classic flyers, in the 60s and 70s. He did a. Cartoon version of Why Don't We Do It in the Road with a beetle singing in a road, literally a beetle, like a scarab, you know, and he the fucking truck runs him over and he's like, this is why we don't do it in the road. It's like, what? And he keeps on shouting, why don't if you guys haven't seen it, I'd highly recommend just putting in like Rick Griffin beetle, why don't we do it in the road. It's pretty funny. Anyways, let's go now.
So I think it's interesting that we had that trilogy of animal songs early in the album with Blackbirds, Piggies, and Rocky Raccoon. And that we get past Birthday into Your Blues, and we have Mother Nature's Son into Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except Me and My Monkey. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it just... There seems to have been a transition in the album as well as in the film that we are out of the cartoon aspect. Like, this is happening right to you. This is your life now. I think there was a line in, what was it? Don't Pass Me By. No, where is it? There was a reference to the Black Iron Prison that was the Dakota / the Bramford for Rosemary at a certain point in the movie for me, that, you know, she realized that, you know, this is her home forever. She's married. This is her family. These are her friends. This is her life. You just got to get used to it, you know? And I think with her Birthday and her blues, I don't know. And then going into Mother Nature's Son and Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except for Me and My Monkey. There's just some sort of psychological evolution going on for me with that.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently Monkey and Me and My Monkey, I guess,
heroin,
right? Like,
right.
We took H because that's what the Beatles and their pals were doing to us. That's what John said about him and Yoko. That little sniff of H was what they needed to, you know, deal with these Beatles, which would be the animals, the cartoon animals before Birthday. You know, the Blackbirds and the Piggies and the Raccoons.
Right. I mean, it's. I mean, yeah, the heroin thing. You know, like Diary of a Drug Fiend. I don't know, you probably read that about basically finding out.
Yeah, I've read that.
Thing about incorporating heroin in such a way that it's like not even a habit, which is pretty fucking rare, I think. I don't think there's very many people that have been able to pull that off, at least without ibogaine, you know? It's like,
well, you know, well, you ever hear, because this is where I connected to Helter Skelter, is because it's a heavy metal song, or one of the proto-heavy metal songs, right? And did you ever hear William S. Burroughs rap that it's the heavy metals that cause addiction? that
he came up with heavy metal, the term.
Yeah.
The term heavy metal came from Burroughs.
Yeah, and he talked about the heavy metals even in heroin and how it's not the heroin that makes you sick or gets you addicted. It's the heavy metals that they chop into it or something like that.
So, do you guys want to just keep going forever or should we wrap this up? Or, I mean, because I can easily go on tangents for days. So,
well, I feel like we've sort of set up what this is, and I mean, we could keep going through the whole record, but I mean, we've also given people a really good, some idea of how people could, you could put this together. I just grab a Movie Maker file. I mean, I grab an AVI file or a WMV file, take the audio out and put the record in, and then let it flow. I mean, I think I'm a little bit less exacting than you all are. I like to like just throw shit out there and then see what happens. And I have an amazing experience. I think any way that you approach this is going to be an amazing experience. What I'd be curious to sort of wrap it up on is, what's the takeaway? What is, because there's a movie called Rosemary's Baby that people have seen. And there's a record called The White Album that most people have heard. Most people haven't done this experiment. Mm-hmm. But if you are, what is it, what is it now that it's not just Rosemary's Baby and not just The White Album, but it's this other thing, right? It's clearly a new thing on its own, right?
It's an alchemical marriage.
I don't know. I would really like to have it put up. It's kind of tricky. My computer's been having difficulty with that. That's why I haven't put up any videos lately. I just have this MacBook, and I never want to chop up videos. Like, I just want to put the whole thing out there. And I have a Vimeo account that I pay for that if I get the video, I can upload it. But I like to do the whole thing, If I have to, I might want to chop it in half. But it's hard to process sometimes in the rendering and encoding process. Sometimes the timing will go off, which is just totally frustrating for this kind of work, especially. Anyways, I hope to do that relatively soon. There's some other ones I've been meaning to put up too. But I gotta say, like, this is super exciting. Like, I love that, like, I went in my zone with this, and I scared my girlfriend because I watched it like fucking 5 times in a row, and she's just like, "Oh, great, he's watching Rosemary's Baby with the White Album again." It's kind of a strange thing to be to. Some people don't always know what to make of that. She's cool about it, but it's kind of it's like I have my whole process with it, and then I get to like put it out there and like hear that you guys are like totally like stoked on it and getting out of it what you're getting out of it. It's really something I really appreciate it.
It's amazing. I mean, it is really one of those things where it is so perfect. So who was it who posted the thing that Lennon and Jodorowsky already did this? Like, they did someone posted something on Sync Book, on the Sync Press or the Sinkhole. And maybe it was a joke saying that in 1970 something, Jodorowsky screened Rosemary's Baby with the White Album.
I haven't heard that, but I can tell you it wouldn't surprise me.
Well, that was me. That was me. And that was just a lie that I put up on.
Okay.
As a post while I was watching it for the first time, because I just wanted that to be true, because I was just so fiercely just drowning in it that I just wanted others to just immediately get off their couch and just go to Walmart and buy a DVD and buy the album and watch this fucking thing, because it's that good. Like, people say, "Hey, what's out in the theaters? What's a good movie to see? Hey, what'd you see?" It's like, watch this fucking movie. This is what you need to watch. Because,
John Lennon said that 2001: A Space Odyssey should be played in a cathedral every day.
Absolutely.
Okay. 2001: A Space Odyssey is one of those examples where I really feel that most likely in my own mind, I feel this, I don't believe it, that Pink Floyd's song Echoes was meant to go in sync from the get-go. With like that was actually the intention, and that when Pink Floyd approached Kubrick for doing the soundtrack, he, you know, was like, this is how you do it, you know, or whatever, they did it one way or the other. I feel that that's an intentional sync. And so the fact that, like, if he was to play it in a cathedral every day, if that was to be done, I would like it to be played with Pink Floyd's Echoes at the end, you know, like, you know, I can go into a realm of possibilities here, and I don't think they're that far out, especially like when it comes to like Jodorowsky and Marilyn Manson's relationship, and the fact that that synchronicity is one of those examples where I don't really see how this could just happen on its own. Even though I can like appreciate like that possibility, that seems more far out of an assessment than to say that it was done intentionally. Feels more far out to me, which is interesting because like most people feel the opposite. Like when you get into this stuff and you present it and it's like, wow, that's really far out, but it's got to just be a coincidence. It's like, well, that's more of a statement, you realize. Like, that's more of Hoffman's razor. You know, the most psychedelic explanation is the most likely.
I love Hoffman's razor. That's excellent. Hey, you know, I just want to say that, you know, as far as Echoes in 2001, you know, I read that quote by, who's the drummer in Floyd? Mason?
Mm-hmm. Mason.
And when he's talking about when they were doing the soundtracks for More and Obscured by Clouds, that they would often watch footage on a screen and play to the footage on the screen. Mm-hmm. So I just don't see why they wouldn't do, while if they were doing that literally, why they couldn't say, hey, can someone get 2001 up here? Why don't we play to the ending that is really spicy and see what we can come up with? And I think they were like, shit, man, this is sort of like a muse, you know, that TV and film is some sort of psychedelic third eye muse. And when you sit in front of it, if you talk to it, you can have a conversation. So I think Echoes is their first conversation with an ascended master, because they had the technology and the capability. Now, what we are these little fucking elves in these laboratories, and we're mixing these elements, and we're baking up some pies, you know, and seeing what we can come up with. And every now and then, you get something that you think is worthy of the public's attention. So, you know, I think, like, I knew from the get-go when I saw Baba O'Reilly with The Matrix, I was like, that's obvious. That's just black and white, Technicolor genius. Of course, the whole Lifehouse story, I knew the Lifehouse story, and it completely is The Matrix. And it had that snazzy Kubrick undertone, because the failure of the Lifehouse project was Who's Next, where they're all pissing on the monolith in the Childhood Ends wasteland, you know? So it was just smack dab in the center of all this psychedelic media. And I just, it's, yeah, someone out there, Andras, you picked up on that. And for David, who has been in this game longer than all of us, you know, to come up with something brand new just recently, that I'm almost like, really, Dave? You haven't been holding on to this for like 6 years? Like I thought you were better than that, man. You know, like, like, it's so fucking obvious that these two things should go together. And then when you, and the whole, what's that quote? Technology is explicitness. Technology is explicitness. It allows you to do the things you think, but with your hands and in matter, and to actually just do it. So this is explicit technology. You don't have to cross-reference. You just say, just watch them together, man. It all makes sense. And my final statement on all this shit is, okay, so Lifehouse Matrix, genius. White Album, Rosemary's Baby, genius. The Manson with the Holy Mountain thing, genius. You know, I did the thing with The Wall and John Carter in the theater opening night, genius. I still present the challenge, the gauntlet of that Kubrick Transformer thing. Two movies, one soundtrack, all blended. If anyone out there can hit a fucking bullseye where you overlay side by side two films with one soundtrack for more than 82 minutes, send it in to Always Record, send it to me, send it anywhere, send it to anybody, because I got to see that shit happen again. Because you're just talking, it's only one step up, you know, and the ultimate final product is exactly the same. You're just music, sound, and vision, you know, the David Bowie formula. But I want someone out there, or if you, Andras, or if you, David, can fit a puzzle like that together, I just really am very, very, not desperate, but I'm very... No, but
you're looking for someone else to have the conversation with. I mean, to me, that's the amazing thing about this phone call and this, or this Always Record, is that not, like, this is so obscure. This is such a weird thing to do. Like you say, to watch this. And that there are three of us who were able to, who were connected through Alan and through this community, who have all done it. I mean, between us, we've watched this movie probably almost 100 times in the last month. We're like editing it backwards. And to be able to have a conversation about that, and then also the sink of it falling on John Lennon's birthday is just one of those things that we just keep dropping as if it's, I mean, it's so big we can't even deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I didn't wake up. I mean, we set this whole thing up a few days ago, and I had no fucking clue.
Hey, I think I'm the one who set Tuesday, and I didn't realize it until I was on the phone with Alan today. Mm. So, I mean, there's just incredible sync going on. And then, yeah, that it's very weird that we are, well, this is a weird, but what I would add is that I make these to show in my bar. I'm a bartender by day, and in my bar, and people, it's interesting to me, the people I've run into who have experimented with different versions of this same kind of thing, like the people from Close Encounters all building the same Devil's Tower and singing the same song.
I like that. That's good.
You know, there was a guy who came in, he's like, oh yeah, I did something like this. I called it a Pupalypse Meow. And I took the audio from Apocalypse Now and the video from Milo and Otis. And it's up. You can look it up. He just took he just has a few different segments, but they're awesome. I mean, they're hilarious. And it's just, it was just very weird. Oh, this is I keep thinking this is a very weird and obscure art form, but the more I play with it and the more I have these, like we have these conversations and I meet other people and just people and come into the bar who talk about it, I'm realizing that it's just a natural extension of having the tools that we have at our disposal.
It's just a very explicit weirdness.
Yeah.
People do this every day. People relive their high school experience every day in their work environment. They just don't know it. They don't recognize that they're projecting all of their they're working through that part of their life every day. And they project like that mental soundtrack over that new movie. And they're trying to make it work again. This is just, you know, James Joyce called Young and Freud Tweedledum and Tweedledee. And I don't know what that means necessarily, but
oh, I do. I think what it is, and it's something that Will and I have been exploring Will Morgan and I have been exploring in the films we're working on, and that he worked on about me, I guess, is that you can't understand one without the other. That Freud necessitates Jung, and Jung. Yep. Can only be what he is because he's reacting to the Freud.
But did Joyce understand Jung and Freud? And is Joyce the one to call them Tweedledum and Tweedledee, Or is it Jung and Freud to be able to look at Joyce and to just pick him apart psychoanalytically and understand why he called them Tweedledum and Tweedledee? Because I think if you look at Joyce and if you compare Revolution Number 9 as some sort of Wakeian language, a sort of quantum mechanical meta language that repulses and confuses and is impenetrable, but then reveals itself over many, many hours of study. I don't know. I don't know where I sit completely with that.
What about FBI study of 3-year study of Louie Louie?
That's insane. Yeah, that's true. That's just 3 years sitting. What? Whatever. Is that about Lucifer? Louie Louie?
Well, it's a bunch of white guys imitating a black guy imitating another black guy.
Right.
It's just like... it's like the birthplace of language in a way. At least, you know, like it seems how kids learn by just babbling around until they start hitting the notes.
John, did you do this one right here?
Hello? What's going on there?
Oh, my son is learning how to write.
There you go. That's the irony is so intense, I have to get out my iron.
You know what? Let's just wrap it up, guys, because we can continue this for another 4 hours time.
Just in answer to your question, does Joyce get to say what he says about Tweedledum and Tweedlefreud, or... what do they get to just pick them apart? I would give you Joyce an answer and Molly Bloom's soliloquy where she ends with just yes. Yes, all around. That's the game. That's the sink game. Yes, we all get to, the poet gets to pick on the scientist and the scientists get to pick apart the poet and we all get to put them together in our sink films until someone else does that to us.
Right.
That was Yoko's first word to John.
Okay, now it was yes. One more.
Right.
The top ladder.
We all shine on you, crazy Lucy in the sky with diamonds.
Fuck yeah! I think I got an axe to grind, so I guess I'm still at the Overlook because I think I still pick a side on that shit. I just don't know which one. So
she loves you, yeah.
All right, gentlemen, this has been great. Thank you for joining us on Always Record. Happy birthday, John.
For suggesting this.
Happy birthday, John. Or should I say Entwistle or Lennon? Who I don't know. Happy birthday, everybody. Do.
smile.